thank you very much for joining me for this conversation. We've got about a minute left, and I want to try to fit in two things. First of all, what can people who are listening do if they want to support the work of Pop Mob or be part of Pop Mob?
I think right now we're going to be going forward thinking about things. There were people that were obviously hurt and hospitalized, and there were also people that were arrested as a result of the action on Saturday. So there will be fundraisers going up to raise money for people's medical and jail support costs. So for folks that can donate monetarily, that's always a huge need. I think that folks should also just get engaged in your communities, talk to people, find organizations that you support, and just, I don't know. There's a lot of ways to be engaged. You can show up to actions. You can, I'm totally dragging.
You said a lot, yeah. Actually. Effie. David, do you want to add to that?
Yeah, I think the point about like talking to communities is really crucial, right? There are a lot of bad, wrong ideas about what Antifa is, what anti-fascism means. And the ways that those narratives get circulated, it's not just in the media, right? It's at your work, it's in your friend group, it's in your families. And talking to people about it, telling them the truth about these movements, and trying to show them that, like, they are also anti-fascists. We're all anti-fascists. If you're not on Patriot Prayer's team, you're an anti-fascist. And, like, making that point and, like, showing them that reality is really important, and is really important work. It's a hearts and minds issue.
Thank you guys for joining me and talking about Pop Mob and the work that you all are doing. It's important work. And I just want to say in closing, thank you, the listeners, for listening to News from the Boo and for supporting KBOO. And learn about fascism and what fascism is. It's not something that can easily be oversimplified, although it often is. It's a very complex set of things that wind up being called and defined as such, and we need to study history. So I would like to encourage listeners out there to find out what fascism is for yourself, and thank you for listening. Peace.
Good evening. The time is 6:01. You are listening to KBOO Portland, and up next is Right to Survive.
Hi, this is John Shuck. On the next Beloved Community, I welcome Cynthia McKinney, former Congresswoman and candidate for president. She speaks candidly about 9/11, the deep state, COINTELPRO, the Russians, the media, Israel, and more. Beloved Community, August 10th, Friday, 9 a.m. on KBOO.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Feet to the Fire campaign and protest on Saturday, August 11th at 10 a.m. at the Multnomah County Courthouse in Portland. The monthly Feet to the Fire campaign is part of a national campaign started by Protect Our Stolen Treasures out of Detroit to hold district attorneys accountable for protecting us against police violence and hate crimes. This peaceful protest outside a county courthouse calls for justice for those lost to police violence and hate crimes. Again, that's the Feet to the Fire campaign and protest this month, Saturday, August 11th at 10 a.m. at the Multnomah County Courthouse, 1021 Southwest 4th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Portland.
You're listening to Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 in Portland. I'm Ibrahim Mubarak of Right to Survive. On this show, we go to Ground Zero, Portland, Oregon, and report news and stories that corporate media don't cover. We'll bring the uncut reality from the perspective of the unhoused community.
This is Lisa Fay with Right to Survive Radio. R2S Radio goes into the houseless community, making their voices heard, speaking to individuals on subjects that directly relate to their daily struggles.
Somebody help me.
That's work.
This is not healthy.
Oh, man.
I am not wealthy.
What I do, have the power to break the chains.
Doing what's right, you.
Mike.
Conservator. This is Ibrahim Mubarak from Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM. I'm your host along with
Lisa Fay
and
Jeff Litticoat.
Okay, and our topic is
conservatorships.
Conservatorship. And conservatorship is where they're trying to impose and force houseless people to commit to mental institutions, would lead to the mass criminalization of people going to jail. And our special guest couldn't make it here from San Francisco, but I love her, and she's been up to, she's doing the research on this, and her name is Carl, and she's a member of RAP Residency, Reston Regency Advocacy.
Regional.
Western Regency Advocacy Project.
Tongue twister.
Tongue twister. Yeah, I'm talking too fast. I just got a protest in front of City Hall, and this is the absurd thing about that, is that we went to protest police accountability, and the stupid mayor called the police on us. So that's real accountable. So, okay, Carl, can you tell us about the research that you're doing?
Yeah. Hey, y'all.
Hey.
Hey.
I'm based out of California, and there's been this bill that's been making its way through the California legislature called SB 1045 that's been trying to expand conservatorship across California. But it's kind of a broader shift that's also happening across a bunch of other states too. So like Ibrahim was saying, conservatorship is a way that people can be incarcerated without going through the criminal legal system if they're deemed to be mentally unable or unfit to take care of their basic needs, which is something that the state sees for a person and not something that someone would self-identify with. And this bill is really terrifying. It's a little bit less terrifying right now than it originally was, because so many folks have been pushing back against it and organizing. So they've watered down the bill a lot to make it less awful, though still pretty terrible. And this bill actually came out of San Francisco, which is where I work. The previous mayor of San Francisco, Ed Lee, was pretty notorious for criminalizing homeless folks for existing, and trying really everything he could to make people disappear, to make way, especially for big tech businesses to move into San Francisco. And so this was actually a bill that was his idea, or like his brainchild, was to expand conservatorship, because conservatorship is a process that already exists. But his idea was to expand conservatorship to include things like people could be considered for conservatorship if they were chronically homeless. If they were people who were chronically put on 5150 holds, which is something that a cop or a mental health professional can place you on if you're seen as being a risk to yourself or others. Also, if people were chronically being hospitalized, or if people were chronically spending time in jail over a short period of time. And which is really, yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry for cutting you off.
Well, I'm just that all of those things are really things that mostly impact street-based people and the way that they're being targeted by the cops. So it's kind of just another way of saying homeless folks.
Okay, so this conservatorship, if that means if you're not a conservative, that it's going to affect you, or and that's why they call it conservatorship, or is the conservative coming up with these unjust laws that they're imposing on people that was forced to live in this predicament?
Yeah, I mean, it's like really you have no choice over the matter if you're going to be conserved, which is being incarcerated. It's just something that either a mental health professional or a police officer or whoever is making an assessment based on you, and you really lose pretty much all of your rights in the process.
So you don't have no say-so on where you're going, so they go and give you the blotter ink test and ask you what this looked like, and if you don't say something that's close to what they think it is, they'll tell you have mental problems, and then they'll put you up and feed you medicine that make you even more unmind control, and they can keep you there. And so now they starting to get money off of you because they had to house you in this place. So are they making turning that into a business on some unjust laws? Is that exactly what this is close to, or do you think that's what they're going to do?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, there's a little bit of research, and there's so much anecdotal information about any time that a person spends inside of a prison or jail or a hospital where they're not allowed to leave really deteriorates someone's mental wellness. So it's also kind of like actually making people more unwell under the guise of being called treatment, you know?
So I was reading up a little bit from the local papers in San Francisco. The Patch, the Examiner, SF Gate, the papers go on and on about how they're singing the praises of San Francisco Senator, State Senator Scott Wiener's introduction of this legislation, and how great it is that it'll combat mental illness and substance abuse and curtail the frequency of jail visits and ER visits by houseless individuals by declaring them into conservatorship. Why are the newspapers hailing this as such a great novel idea when it seems that it is a repeat of stripping up our rights from many years ago, just under a new way of viewing things?
Yeah. I mean, folks in San Francisco, like all over the country, house people and people who have wealth don't want to see homeless folks around, right? So any way that people can think of to remove people from public space is going to always be seen as a good idea. And there is like this kind of move that's been happening away from mass incarceration is the way that a lot of people are talking about it, starting to see jails and prisons as being not helpful for people and being really harmful for folks. And so this is kind of part of a broader shift of changing the words that people are using when they're talking about prisons and jails to start talking about healthcare, and to start framing incarceration and policing as a health concern, and like as something that provides some treatment, or that people would get well from going into these places, which is absolutely not true. So I feel like folks are excited about anything that can remove people from public space and that they can have a little relief from their consciousness and feel like something helpful is happening, when in fact this is the exact same, like you said, Lisa, is the exact same harmful behavior as incarceration and criminalization.
Coral, Jeff Littlecoat here. All your bottom lines seem true, but I have some questions, and it's kind of like playing devil's advocate, but it's also not. I see people on the street kind of deteriorating sometimes, and there's a couple people I have in mind right now that really are getting more and more seriously mentally challenged themselves. And we're asking ourselves, how do we respond to this? We don't want to engage the police, and the mental health facilities are completely inadequate. And so there gets to be talk of people taking matters into their own hand, because these people are increasingly scary and a threat to themselves, but also reflect badly on all of the homeless. And so my gut reaction is, the police ought to have some avenue, or somebody ought to have some pathway where you can identify somebody and get them help without them having to go in through applying for Social Security benefits or whatever. They're clearly eligible, should be, and should not have to go through that process to get them additional help. How do you deal with the problem if you don't have adequate mental health facilities and some police engagement?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's a lot of things that folks are trying about how to support people who are struggling to take care of themselves or struggling with their mental health in ways that are not locking people up, you know? And I think it really depends on the circumstance of the person. Is the person someone who sleeps outside and could have housing if they had a support person who was inside their house with them? Are they someone who...
There are some that I think are probably inappropriate for indoor living if that indoor living means that there are neighbors or roommates.
Yeah.
So there's that category.
Go on. I think it also, what we're talking about is, radically shifting how we are with each other, what is the thing that folks are doing if they're unable to take care of themselves that is harmful to people? Are they actually hurting someone? Are they threatening someone? Are they beating someone up? If those things are happening, then I think that there could be other accountability measures that are in place that aren't incarceration. But if the person, most of the time what I see is the folks who are being most targeted as mentally unstable are just people that are kind of upsetting business as usual,
right?
You know?
The specific person I'm thinking of falls more into the category of causing so much trouble for other people, not by hitting them necessarily, but causing so much trouble and so much stress and so much disruption that he's going to get injured. It's almost like he's asking for suicide by homeless, which would be a slow approach as opposed to suicide by police. But
503-231-8187. You listen to Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM. And we're going to take a small break and continue with this conversation with Coral out of San Francisco from Western Regency Advocacy Project, better known as RAP. So let's listen to some music and call in and ask your question or address your concerns again at 503-231-8187. All right, you're listening to Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial. And our call-in number is 503-231-8187. And we talked about conservatorship with Curl from San Francisco and a member of the RAP, Western Regency Advocacy Project. You have questions, do make that call.
All right, Coral, it's Lisa, and we are back. I have a question about the abuses of conservatorship. Reading this bill, I see that it can go from a temporary 72-hour hold all the way up to 30 days that can be reviewed indefinitely. So the person may or may never get out of conservatorship. What are some of the other exploitations that you see coming with this bill passing?
Yeah. I mean, so a few of the things that were most egregious changed about the bill too. So all of the pieces around specifically targeting homeless people were removed from the bill. So now it's just talking about that people could be conserved if they were deemed seriously mentally ill and had a substance use disorder, is what they're calling it. And were unable to take care of themselves. So that's what the criteria is that's currently in the bill. I personally think that most uses of this bill are going to be abuses, in the way that people can't actually consent to the process happening. And I've been struggling a bit with this because I do know some people who have been hospitalized for mental health reasons and have felt like it was something that's helpful. And to me, I feel like we need to have other types of alternatives that exist that aren't that somebody can't leave or that somebody's actually physically caged. I think that even having services that are like really, really recommend that you not leave, or really try to hold you accountable in different ways around your behavior, are so much more helpful than physically stopping someone from leaving. So really, I see it, every use of conservatorship to be an abuse, because it is incarceration, and it's also incarceration without the criminal legal system, which I don't think the criminal legal system is particularly helpful or just. But it also is a system, an accountability system, that is set up so that somebody can't just be incarcerated without really anybody overseeing it. And conservatorship kind of does bypass that a little bit, in that if somebody meets the criteria, they could just be incarcerated for an undetermined amount of time.
Okay. We have a caller on the line, and her name is Karen. Or they name is Karen. I don't know the pronunciation, but we're going to just say Karen. State your questions or concern.
Okay. I was wondering, I know in Portland here, the mayor and the police commissioner, or I don't know if it's the chief that's asking for it, or the so-called police union, wants a lot more police in Portland. And many people, including myself, think, no, we don't need police. And some people are saying we need mental health workers. But hearing what you're talking about now, I wonder if there has to be a lot of stipulations about what that really means, mental health workers, and how they would interact with people who are trying to survive on the streets.
Or we could go the more inexpensive way.
Pardon?
Go ahead.
Oh, that's my question.
Okay, Carl, you want to answer that, or anyone here?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that a lot of mental health workers are not trying to incarcerate people, and a lot of mental health workers are really not trying to collaborate with the police also. So I think that it does just matter where people's values are and how people are coming to their work. I also feel like mental health workers are most effective when they're peer-based people, and definitely people that are not trying to further criminalize folks that are already really criminalized.
Well, we all know that within the first month, I mean, who don't know that within the first month that people suffer some type of mental illness, and it's called sleep deprived. And then people, yeah. Then people get depressed because we're not used. We wasn't raised to the American dream concept. Don't teach us how to live outside, and because we out in the streets, we looked at ourselves as failures, and everybody else looked at us as failures. So how are they going to put what mental illness that you have in on the scale if you belong to if you need to be incarcerated or in a mental institution?
Can you say the question again?
How on what scale and how much mental illness, and that's to both of you all can answer that, on the scale on who's going to decide on how much you need to be institutionalized from living on the streets?
Well, with conservatorship, the criteria is really just, it's pretty vague, you know. It's just, if you're seen as being seriously mentally ill, which just means that a mental health worker has given you that kind of a diagnosis, if you're seen as having a substance abuse disorder, which is a similar thing, just that somebody has said that you use drugs in a way that is a substance abuse disorder, and that you're unable to take care of yourself. And this is why it's so scary, is that it's really subjective to the housed mental health worker that's assessing the person, and not actually based on if the person feels like they are unable to take care of their basic needs, or if they even feel like they have a substance abuse disorder or any of these things, you know?
Yeah, and so that leads back. Or Karen, do you have anything to say before you go, or you can stay on and listen, or call back again?
Yeah, I'm listening.
Okay.
It just seems to me, if I was having to try to exist on the streets, I'd very soon be depressed and probably using drugs too, just to kind of dull the pain.
Yeah.
So I mean, to expect people to somehow be able to accept what they're calling mental health care and have to still be unhoused, I think is a double bind. You know, it's like, it's maybe part of an answer. It's better than police putting them in jail, but, and then also involuntary, people having to be committed to an institution in an involuntary way, I think is also an inhumane way to handle it. So when you said, Carol said it was vague, I think that's the big problem, is it's got to be very carefully defined what it's going to be. And I think peer help is obviously wonderful and probably the best way to go. But again, you know, if you're trying to deal with certain problems and then you still have to try to survive on the streets, that's what I don't understand.
Exactly, because Right to Survive, when we go out and talk to the houseless community in the streets, and then the social workers or entity come and ask us questions, the first thing we ask them is, can you tell the difference between somebody that's coming down off a drug, that's sleep deprived or having mental issues, because their furtive movements is so similar that you can diagnose them wrong? And again, who's the people, what I want to know, Carl, is who going to be accountable for saying these people have mental issues or not? And you may not, you can just be so tired that, you know, you're kind of like in a state of disarray
and not having proper nutrition.
Exactly.
All sorts of symptoms.
Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely it, and that is real scary. And I feel like there's some similar shift that I've been seeing around expansions about people who are seen unfit to stand trial, which is kind of a similar arbitrary designation that someone can get if they are someone who's going through a criminal trial and the judge feels like their mental state is in a way where they can't stand trial. And folks who are seen as being unfit to stand trial can end up in the state hospital also indefinitely until they become fit to stand trial. And I was in a hearing of a friend of mine not too long ago, and she was deemed unfit to stand trial because they were asking her, as part of the legal system, they ask you if you understand the legal procedure that's happening to you. And she didn't understand because it's really confusing and understandably doesn't really make any sense. And she was deemed unfit to stand trial and had to just continue to stay in jail until she understood the process, which was really just that she had to lie at some point and say that she understood the legal system when she didn't. And I feel like these are pretty scary expansions that could lead to a lot more incarceration of our folks.
Exactly. Jeff, you had something to say. It was cut off. What was you saying?
I don't remember. It's really helpful when a conversation is I don't know, never okay. mind. But additionally, in addition to bad nutrition, I think a person that's totally non-mentally challenged, once they're subjected to what people are subjected to on the streets, for example, camp sweeps, where your stuff is at a minimum completely disorganized and disarray as a consequence of having to move. So if you've complied and you've avoided the sweep, you've still packed all of your stuff and things don't get in the right place necessarily. And then when you go looking for one thing, everything gets disorganized. And when that happens over and over and over again, I think eventually people give up and stop trying to keep things organized or keep their toiletries together or go out and replace their toiletries and all of that stuff. And eventually that makes them not only stressed out, but I think it begins to make them, if not mentally challenged in reality, then in for all intents and purposes, because the result is the same.
So you're listening to Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial. And we talk about conservatorship with Carl from San Francisco Western Regency Advocacy Project. If you have any questions or concern, please call in at 503-231-8187. And we're going to go to a small commercial break and listen to some music and come back and hear your concerns and hear more from Carl.
Welcome back to Right to Survive Radio here at KBOO 90.7 FM. The call-in number tonight is 503-231-8187, and we're talking with Coral from Western Regional Advocacy Project, San Francisco, and Jeff Litico, and our co-host Ibrahim Mubarak. We had Karen on the line for a little bit, and we hope we'll have more calls soon. Coral, I was looking at a report from 2013 that AARP put out, and from the information they were able to gather, guardianship or conservatorship nationally has an estimated 1.5 million people in conservatorship or guardianship. But they're saying it's a best guess, that the numbers are scant and vary in quality. If the bill in San Francisco ends up going through, How is California going to track the number of houseless people that are put into conservatorship and track the money? How much it's going to cost the state to warehouse houseless people under such dracarian conditions?
Or how much the state going to make?
Yeah, from federal dollars.
Yeah, I think that it will probably not be huge numbers to start because it's a pilot project in San Francisco and Los Angeles, which are very densely populated. But the purpose of it is to kind of try to see how it works in San Francisco and LA and then roll out to the rest of California from there and then probably to other states. So I'm not sure exactly where their data collection is going. I know that they have a kind of advisory board that's through the Department of Public Health, I believe, in San Francisco and LA. So I would imagine that they would be the folks that are collecting that data. But I do think that it will be important to get that data when we're trying to make sure that the pilot does not get renewed and that we can stop this expansion.
I don't think you're going to be... I hope we can stop this extension and this bleed out into other cities and other states. But like I've been saying, houselessness is becoming a big business. And I predict it's going to be in the top three. The auto industry is gone. So it's going to be education, jails, and houselessness. And people are making money off of houseless people, off of people's pain. They gentrifying the neighborhood. When we was in houseless communities, when we was in Tucson, Arizona, and helping them with their Right to Dream Tucson tent city, we had mental health workers going around asking the houseless people, if you say you have a mental health, we can get you in housing and stuff. You just have to admit to it. And so then it was being a practice then to say all houseless people have mental problems, but they don't say our house people have it also, because we was housed before we came on the street. So how are they going to combat that? And then the military, people come from the military suffering from post-traumatic stress, and people like Jeff was saying, living in the streets too long, you accumulate that, you're seeing all your valuables taken away, you can't do nothing about it. You see the police coming tearing up your tent, you're seeing your children's sentimental value of the photos that you can't recapture anymore. So they're creating things so people can fall in, so they can make money off of people to do things. And this conservatorship thing is a bunch of mess.
Meanwhile, the completely greedy housed people and their planet-destroying lifestyle are the sane ones.
My concern is that there's not enough judges that really understand what this pilot project is. There's not enough volunteers. There's certain reporting deadlines that they have to make. And it will be interesting to see how it plays out with the oversight committee and where the funding's going to come after the first year for the 5-year project.
All right, you listen to Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial. 503-231-8187 is the call-in number. We have a caller. Mark, you're on.
Yes, hello. Long-time listener, first-time caller. I do have a question.
Yes.
I'd like to know if anybody on your panel can tell me if there's a difference between the care, the mental care that a person will get in a federal prison, a state prison, versus a for-private prison. Is there a difference in that?
Carl, you're on.
Yeah, between the medical care. It really depends on the and the folks are in, what kind of care is available. My experience working with people in state and federal prisons is that the medical care is pretty awful. And as Ibrahim was talking about a little bit, that most of the mental health care that people get is just medication that kind of turns them into a zombie, to try to make them be not very disruptive. I also have done a lot of work with trans women who are in prison, in state and federal prisons. And some of the stories I've heard from medical care that folks are getting in both of those types of facilities is pretty disturbing and awful. But I do know that there are some prisons that are better than others for their medical care. I don't think that there's a real distinction based on state or federal. I think it really is actually just if there are staff in the prisons that actually care about people.
Do you think it comes down to the money? Is it just cheaper to put people in prison than it is to put them in a mental hospital where they get care? Is that what it comes down to?
The money. That's what it comes down to. Everything is with money. But Carl, you're going to answer that. I'm sorry. That's my opinion.
Though the confusing thing is that all, like, state incarceration, federal incarceration, incarceration in a mental health facility, all those things are incredibly expensive. And they're actually much more expensive than providing someone with subsidized housing. So it's also, it is about the money, and it also is not even a good choice of how to use money.
It's not good, but when it comes to houseless people, anything to make your sidewalk clean, the general public is for, and they're not really caring. They don't care what really happened to the houseless community. I'm not saying everyone as a whole, but you have these people that don't really care, because if they care, they wouldn't be calling the police when they see a houseless person, whether it's a crime committed or not. They don't care. They just want them out of sight.
Well, that pretty much answers my question.
Thank you.
Coral, could you talk a little bit about the 22 points that RAP issued, what we could do instead of conservatorship and criminalizing the houseless?
Yeah. I mean, so many things. I think it starts with just, like, what is it that people actually need? Are people that are living on the streets want to be living indoors and they need housing, then we should be giving folks housing. Are they people that want to be outside and want to do that in a way that's safer, then we should be honoring people's self-determination in their encampments or their tiny homes. Is it that people want psychiatric meds? Then we should be making those available in a different kind of way that doesn't mean that somebody has to be criminalized in order to access them. Or it could also be like, do people even have access to their community? Are people feeling really isolated, and that's part of why their mental health is destabilized in this way? So many things. It just, like, really depends on what is the thing that people actually need.
So do you think when some mental issues is happening in a houseless community in the street, do you think the police should be called? And why not?
Or why?
Or why?
I don't think the police should be called ever. But that's not everyone's perspective.
But amen to that.
I believe in us collectively building our capacity to navigate harm and to deal with conflict in a way that the police don't have to be involved with. I think that ideally we would have different kind of systems built out. So if there's a conflict that's happening where someone's physically wounded and they need a health worker, we would have health workers that could roll out. If there's a conflict that's happening between people and someone's having a mental health crisis, that there could be mental health workers that could roll out. And then I think that there's also, like, when people have been harmed, that we need to be developing different kind of accountability systems that aren't prisons and jails, which we know doesn't actually address the root problem of what is happening. Because folks that spend a lot of time in prisons and jails usually just become very traumatized and often end up harming more people or themselves.
Yeah, I think they should have more agencies with trauma impact care, and that police should be left out of it. And again, what about people that's going through changes? And you know, if you're normal, I hate that. Forgive me, bad Ibrahim. Well, if you're in a good state of mind, and you lose your child, or your father die, or somebody in your family, you know, been in a crucial situation, and you just, you know, want to self-medicate or get drunk or do something, who's the one to say that you need to go to these facilities about this conservatorship thing? And are these doctors or nurses, are they going to be legit, or they just going to read something in the books and say, hey, I know about this?
Because you have a moment where you have a lapse in judgment.
Yeah.
I hope we're not overdoing the mental illness in the homeless community. There's increases, probably. My testimony would be anecdotal, but I'll bet you a dollar to a dime there's massive increases in mental illness, real mental illness, in the community, in this culture as a whole. Poor people are faced with a system that tries to deal with them that is more public. But the wealthier folks, when they're having a crisis, their families manage to incarcerate them in private facilities, and they're probably just as victimized as are the poor by that type of system. What we need, when you said we need mental health care professionals, more of them rather than police, I still think there's a role for the police to play. We do need better police training and things. But really, I think we all need to become mental health care professionals, and our communities need to become the health care facilities.
Well, Jeff, to your answer, the most well-known recently person that had a mental breakdown, the police came in and shot him inside of a shelter where everybody was watching that, and that traumatic impact that had on people, they still talking about that. So again,
and they should have been fired the next day.
Yeah, I don't think the police should have a cause in somebody that's, you know.
Well, they should have been fired. They should have been fired the next day, and then police would think twice about doing that sort of thing. It's the culture. So it's not just citizens out of the blue are picking up a phone and calling in the homeless because they hate the homeless. It's that this Portland is encouraging people to call in or log on to the website and make complaints. So citizens are getting the impression that this is that they're being good citizens by making these reports. And when we have the police shootings, or the reactions that you get from the police, or the tattoo person owner that shot and killed a homeless person who the other day for throwing a lint removing roll at him, shot, you know, he responded by pulling out a semi-automatic. When people get away with that, it's the culture says to everybody that these are appropriate responses to the homeless. And it's just going to get worse.
And it's that culture just bringing up this conservatorship thing, that labeling people that live in the street as mental, having mental issues, so they can make more money and say, oh, put their thumb in the pie and pull it out and say, what a good citizen am I? Lisa, you're on.
Okay. I want to give the call-in number again. We have about 12 minutes left of our show. We have time for one more caller. 503-231-8187. That's 503-231-8187. If you have a question for one of us or for our special guest, Coral from San Francisco, talking about conservatorships and what it means to the homeless.
Also, I was reading where they said it's just 1% of the people that live on the streets in San Francisco and Los Angeles that's being into this new
affected, yeah.
that will be affected into this new conservatorship thing. Carl, can you tell us more about that 1%? But people don't realize 1% of the houseless people in San Francisco probably more than everybody in Portland.
Right. Well, as the number we're using in San Francisco right now is 18,000 folks that are living on the streets or precariously housed. So I'm not good at math, but 1% of that. And I feel afraid of how conservatorship could expand to be incarcerating more folks. They have a lot of strict guidelines about how they're saying this will be used. But my fear is that over time the criteria is going to loosen and that it's just going to be a tool of really incarcerating houseless people en masse and also kind of reversing the anti-institutionalization movement that happened, right? That we had all of these mental hospitals that were seen as being really harmful to people and violating people's basic rights. And I feel like conservatorship is a move towards going back to having mental institutions in that kind of way. But that the mental institutions would be largely houseless people.
So yeah, when in a Ronald Reagan's era, when he closed all the mental institutions down and there was a flood of people going into the streets, what do they expect? And you can cause mental illness on people, as Jeff said, by continue to harass them till they get angry. So is it a thin line between anger, frustration, and mental illness?
Yeah, I mean, and it also, it's completely subjective, right? The mental illness is just, the diagnoses are something that doctors or other mental health professionals have decided about a person based on their behavior. But a lot of folks don't even really identify with the kind of diagnoses that they have. So maybe they are someone who is just having an emotional response to something because something terrible had happened to them that day. And they could be conserved.
503-231-8187. Call in if you have any questions. This is Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial.
What is London Breed, your new mayor, saying about the conservatorship?
Unfortunately, London Breed loves conservatorship.
Of course.
She's the first black woman mayor of San Francisco. And people were really excited about her. When we were trying to stop San Francisco from building a new jail, she was actually quite helpful at the end. But this seems to be a move on her part back towards criminalization because it's backed by the folks that have wealth in San Francisco.
So just like the new affordable housing is car camping, the new jail is going to be mental institutions.
Right. And that's even what they're calling jails, but they're trying to get all this funding from the state to expand their mental health services in jail. But like I was saying, anyone who's spent time in jail and got mental health services can tell you that the mental health services are not helpful and are actually deeply abusive. But the state is calling jails mental health facilities now. So there's kind of like a meshing that's happening.
And in both ends of that equation, whether it's the mental hospitals becoming the jails or the jails becoming the mental hospitals, the commonality is that in both instances, less due process.
Right.
And can you give our listening audience who want to know more about this the information where they can read on this themselves, where to find it?
Yeah, if you want, if you go to www.raphome.org, and RAP is spelled W-R-A-P, there's an article that we wrote back in May that's called There's No Healing in Incarceration and Conservatorship. And that's an article that's a bit dated now because the legislation has changed a bit since then. But that would be a good starting point.
And there it's also California Bill SB 1045, correct?
That's right. You can also look up the bill language.
So do you think this is going to bleed into other states and cities, Cora?
Absolutely. I mean, the move to rebrand prisons, jails, and policing as mental health care, it's happening all across the country. So I think that it's really something folks all across the states need to be looking at and actively fighting and thinking about building up what is the actual health care that we need and what is actually just policing and incarceration calling itself health care.
So I have a thought. I've noticed there's more and more cities across the country, Portland, one of them, being one of the cities that want to erect one-stop tents for helping provide wraparound services for houseless individuals. My thought is that this could possibly end up being the first steps into moving from one-stop shops to conservatory efforts by cities to try and handle or manage the houseless population instead of doing what we all know they need, building more houses. What is your take on the wraparound service facilities?
I think you're absolutely right, Lisa. Oh, it's very scary to think about. But yeah, I think that the one-stop shops are really just a way to make cities feel like they're being helpful while not really doing anything. In San Francisco, people are really excited about the navigation centers, which is these one-stop shops that cost so much money to make and run, and are basically just slightly better shelters. And what people actually need is housing. And if people were investing in housing with the kind of money that they're spending on all this stuff that's just either sending people in circles or locking them up, that we could easily house everyone in this country.
All right, thank you. You've been on on the radio show, listening to Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM. You've been listening to Carl from Rap Western Regency Advocacy Project out of San Francisco. We thank you, Carl. And if you want to know more about this, you can go to
raphome.org,
or you can go to Right to Survive PDX at gmail.com or www.write2survive.org. And Jeff Litico have an announcement that he's doing something.
Not just myself, but also Ariella Tide at the Whitman Gallery at PSU campus, Smith Center. The display, the showings this month are related to communities and trauma, and it runs through the 30th. Reception is tomorrow, Thursday, from 6 to 8, and folks are invited to come and view.
And that's at Smith Hall?
Smith Memorial Center, 1825 Southwest Broadway, second floor, Student Union.
So go see what the people that's been trauma impact doing, and listen and read up more on this, so hopefully this don't come to our state and our city and get passed. We'll be waiting to pass this down.
Actually, the art will heal those who are traumatized, and those who aren't traumatized and should be, it'll fix them too.
Okay.
Thank you, Carl.
Thank you much, and listen to us next month for Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM.
You're listening to Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 in Portland. I'm Ibrahim Mubarak of Right to Survive. On this show, we go to ground zero.
Locked up, they won't let me out. And I had a long day in court, stress me out. Won't give me a bail, it can't get me out. Now I'm headed to the county, gotta do a bid here. I'm used to living luxurious, I don't wanna live here. The walls is gray, the clothes is orange. The phones is broke, the food is garbage. A lot of niggas is living with these circumstances. SP's the same, I still murk your manses. Drug money, the rap money, work advances. Ran and told I should have murked.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 7:01, and next is Combined Culture Radio. Stay tuned.